The son of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos, former Senator Bongbong Marcos, formalizes his bid for the presidency. Lacson Soto tandem officially joins the 2022 race. We'll have political science professor Julio Tihangi for a discussion on developments in the political front. Meanwhile, Vice President Leni Robredo is set to make an important announcement on her 2022 plans. Isambayan convener Etha Rosales will join us to tackle that. And later on in the program, we'll speak to the UK's COP26 regional ambassador Ken O'Flaherty on why the upcoming UN climate change conference should matter to the Philippines. Hi, I'm Carlina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Well, it's a very busy day six of the filing of certificates of candidacy for national positions at the Sofitel tent in Pasay. The son of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos, former Senator Bongbong Marcos, has filed his COC for president. The first tandem to declare their bids for president and vice president, Senator Panfilo Lacson and Senate President Tito Soto, have also formalized their candidacies. Our correspondent Ina Raformina now joins us live from Pasay with details. Ina, go ahead.
Yes, Casey, both the Marcos and the Lacson and Soto camps filed their respective certificates of candidacy for the national positions they are seeking just minutes apart. Former Senator Bongbong Marcos, Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr., arrived with his family here at the COMELEC Filing Center in Pasay City at around 11:13 this morning. And just minutes after, the camp of Senator Panfilo Lacson and Senate President Tito Soto also arrived with their families. Now, after filing his certificate of candidacy, Marcos, who is running under a Partido Federal ng Pilipinas, addressed members of the media and answered questions from the media. When he was asked why he has no running mate, he said that the reason why up to now the vice presidential slate in their party is still open is because they were planning to adopt President Rodrigo Duterte, who of course earlier announced his candidacy for vice president, but just over the weekend withdrew his intent. And that is why Marcos is saying that his party is now undergoing consultations on what to do next and how to move from here, because well, for now they don't have any vice presidential candidate. He has no running mate. He was also asked if he was open to the possibility of running with Senator Bongo, who of course filed his vice presidential COC, and Marcos said why not, that is still open, but as of now, no deal has been sealed. Also asked why a Sara Duterte and Bongbong Marcos tandem did not materialize, Marcos said, well, basically because she did not run, and that is the end of the story. Now, as for the camp of Senator Panfilo Lacson and Senate President Tito Soto, who are running for president and vice president, they are running under different parties, Casey. Lacson is running under Partido para sa Demokratikong Reforma, and Soto is running under NPC. Now, both are saying that should they win in next year's elections, they will institute a kind of governance that is disciplined, a bureaucracy that is disciplined, to make sure that the least of the people will be able to receive aid and will be able to receive basic services from government. Now, they are also saying that they want these elections to be clean and to be fair, of course. They want to fight a good, clean fight, and asked whether this is already the end of a possible one united front for the opposition now that they're filing their COCs one after the other. Soto said basically yes, this is the end of it, and Soto said that right at the outset he and Lacson were saying that they don't want to be identified with any particular fence. Those are his own words. He said that they want to side with the Filipino people. Now, just as a little background, for those who are watching and listening to us right now. Of course, Senator Panfilo Lacson is a graduate of PMA Batch 71, a three-term senator, also formerly chief PNP and chief of the Presidential Anti-Organized Crime Task Force. Now, as to his legislative track record, he sponsored or authored the Anti-Money Laundering Act, the Comprehensive Dangerous Drugs Act, the Anti-Red Tape Act, and Anti-Trafficking in Persons Act, to name a few. As for Senate President Tito Soto, he was a former Quezon City Vice Mayor. He founded the Vice Mayor's League of the Philippines and was elected as its first national president. He was also senator. He's senator since 1992. As to the laws and bills that he passed, these include the Comprehensive Dangerous Drugs Act, the Kasambahay Law, the Expanded Senior Citizens Act, the Maritime Industry Act, the Train Law, and the Family Courts Act. Of course, he also was an entertainer and artist before joining public service. And lastly, as to Marcos Jr., he was a senator from 2010 to 2016, a congressman of Ilocos Norte, 2nd District, in 1992 up to 1995, and then again in 2007 and 2010. And he also served as governor of Ilocos Norte for two terms and vice governor for a single term. As to the laws he passed during his stint at the Senate, he authored the Philippine Archipelagic Baselines Law. And in 2016, he lost his vice presidential bid to Vice President Lenny Robredo by a mere 263,473 votes. Now, aside from the Soto-Lacson tandem and the Marcos camp filing their COCs this morning, Senator Migs Zubiri also filed his COC for his senator, and former Secretary Mark Villar of DPWH also filed his COC for senator. It's a long day, Casey. It's a busy day for us. That is the latest from the COMELEC Filing Center in Pasay City. Back to you.
Thanks a lot. Inara Firmina there joining us this afternoon. Take care, Ina. Keep safe. Well, several groups are against Bongbong Marcos's presidential bid. The opposition coalition Isambayan calling on the youth to resist what it calls another attempt to erase the atrocities of martial law. Human rights group Karapatan described the announcement as shameless. For the group, the campaign against the return of the Marcoses to Malacañang, Marcos's candidacy is a great insult to human rights victims under his father's regime.
It is really unacceptable. I was then a student activist before martial law. So I was just practicing my basic democratic rights as a student activist. When martial law was declared, Amnesty International figures say that 70,000 people were imprisoned. I was among them. 34,000 people were tortured. I was among them. And there were 3,324 people or more extrajudicially killed.
A former commissioner from the Presidential Commission on Good Government believes Marcos's candidacy is just another way for the family to keep the money they stole from the Filipino people. The former senator's bid comes a week after the anti-graft court ordered the turnover of around 96 million pesos and $5.4 million in ill-gotten wealth.
Everything else that they claim to own, whether they admit it or not, is ill-gotten. Everything that they claim to own, whether it's paintings inside their houses, land in other countries, jewelry that was confiscated or still being hidden by them, everything, including whatever Marcos Jr. Uses to finance his lifestyle, to send his children abroad, to educate them abroad, to fund his campaign, for example, that's ill-gotten.
All eyes now on Vice President Lenny Robredo as she is set to make an important announcement regarding her election plans tomorrow. She's doing it a day before the deadline of the filing for COCs. Robredo was nominated by the opposition coalition Isambayan to be its standard bearer. Many groups also urging her to seek the presidency, calling her the true face of the true opposition. So many things happening on the political front. Joining us now for a discussion on the many stories we're chasing today is Dr. Julio Tijanque. He is a professor of political science and international studies at De La Salle University. Professor, nice to see you again. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Casey. Good to see you.
All right. Probably the worst kept secret. Bongbong Marcos now filing for his candidacy for president in 2022. Let me ask you first, how or what will be the effect of this declaration to the administration bets and also to the opposition?
Oh, well, Casey, the turn of events politically in recent days helped to underscore the continuing fluidity of presidential politics in the run-up for 2022. No, I think Bongbong Marcos's decision to run was born out of his burning desire, no, to rehabilitate his family name, no, and a calculation that he has a better shot at accomplishing that this year.
Question now is, in terms of, you know, platform of governance, what does he have to, what could he possibly offer the people?
Well, his record is a matter of, you know, it's public, no? So the voters should look at his track record, starting when he was elected governor of his home province, all the way up until his stint at the Senate, no? But I think, no, the impact of Bongbong Marcos's candidacy is larger than his possibility of returning to Malacañang, no? To my mind, no, a return to the presidential palace would serve as the capstone, no, to his family's 3 decades of gradual political rehabilitation, no, fueled by insistent historical revisionism and the persistent social media propaganda that he has invested on, no? And I think, no, a Marcos candidacy and victory, no, will mark the end, might mark the end of the EDSA narrative, no? Which would be ironic since 2022 is the 50th anniversary of the declaration of martial law. So I think that's the bigger impact to the trajectory of the politics of this country.
And for sure, Professor Tijanque, we're not just talking about the effect of his candidacy in the 2022 elections. There's a bigger picture here that is not only looking forward, but we also have to look back. As you said, as look back at what happened in the past 30 years. Right. So what do you think will, or what should have been done, I should say first, what should have been done in those past 30 years? Who dropped the ball? What went wrong that we're now seeing him filing for his candidacy for president?
You know, this did not happen overnight. No, the rehabilitation, the political rehabilitation of the Marcos family started when previous administrations post-EDSA allowed the Marcoses to return without necessarily going through the process known as transitional justice, no, such as admission of the sins committed by the father to the nation, and most importantly, the return of ill-gotten wealth, no? So these are the two things that should have done. But, you know, the nature of the democratic transition since 1986 is that that transition included most of the people that were part of the Marcos dictatorship, no? And so that allowed what is known as the emergence of authoritarian or proto-authoritarian successors to be integrated into the democratic transition. So, plus, of course, aside from the political sphere, our social sphere has willingly embraced, no, the return of the Marcoses. No, so the Marcoses were treated as if they were the regular celebrities that they were when they were in power.
The fact that he has filed his candidacy formally, formalized his participation in the presidential race. Yes. Do you think that this sort of normalized, once again, the participation of the Marcoses, and it normalizes now their place in history in such a way that, you know, it doesn't even talk about the atrocities committed anymore during his father's reign?
Yes, that is indeed possible. That in fact, looking at his numbers, you know, and looking at the possibility of his victory in next year's election, then we can say that, you know, indeed, the rehabilitation has been completed and their participation in all aspects of the life of the Filipino nation has been normalized.
Well, I want to focus now on the opposition and the effect, correct, the impact of his candidacy on the opposition. We just heard from our correspondent talking about Senators Pangilo Lacson and Tito Soto filing their candidacies today as well. Neither of them want to be associated with the administration or the opposition.
Right.
But with Marcos running, is there now a clear delineation as to where you should associate yourself with?
Yeah. If we look at the bigger political lay of the land, no? Of course, the decision of Bongbong Marcos to run for the presidency was born of the non-decision, or at least for now, the non-decision of Sara Duterte, the erstwhile frontrunner, not to pursue, no, the presidency. No, so of course, Sara Duterte has been hemming and hawing. Partly strategic, no, taken from her tatay's playbook, and partly dramatic, no, trying to give some suspense, no. But of course, there's been talk about disagreements, no, with her father politically, no. So there's been talk of Sara Bongbong tandem before, which was being brokered by some political personalities. And this could have been a formidable alliance between the House of Marcos of the North and the House of the Dutertes of the South. No, but of course, all bets are off. No, given the recent results of the survey, surveys that were published, no, made public, and internal surveys that showed that he has the numbers to pursue that election. No, this has an impact on, of course, the calculation of the opposition and the non-administration candidates, because now we're seeing traditional opposition, no, those who oppose Marcos and Duterte from the very beginning, and the emerging non-administration candidates who had a falling out or had or distancing themselves from the current administration. So we're looking at several moving parts here, no? Now, the declaration of Marcos is the trigger, no, that will push, I think, no, VP Lenny Robredo to finally pursue the presidency.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a bit, Professor Tanaki. But I just want to jump on the topic that you just mentioned there. You know, about the true opposition, the delineation. It's very clear who was against the Marcoses, right, and the Duterte from the very beginning.
Right.
The question remains: is this an issue that weighs heavily in the public's mind, in the voting public's mind? Is it clear to them that this is about that?
Apparently not. No. Again, no. If we will base it on the public opinion, no, there is a substantive portion of the electorate, no, who have totally embraced, no, the Marcos narrative, no, and there are those who have forgotten, no, the atrocities that the nation experienced during the martial law years. No? So that is a big challenge now for the mainstream opposition to remind, no, the public about martial law and the Marcos years. Now, of course, this will shift the attention again to the political division, no, between the Marcos, the Duterte, and the Dutertes, and those followers of EDSA and Aquinos, no. So whether this will be the main narrative in next year's election remains to be seen, because there is also a substantive portion of the electorate who are no longer enthralled by this political drama between the yellows and the reds, or the Marcos supporters, or the Duterte supporters, and Aquino supporters.
We're going to jump in on that topic in a bit. But first, Vice President Leni Robredo, is it clear to you now that she should run for the presidency, given that Bongbong Marcos just formalized his bid?
Yes, definitely. This will be the trigger that will eventually, as I've said, no, convince Vice President Leni to take on the challenge of the presidency. And this will definitely energize her base, particularly the pro-Aquino, the yellow opposition. And whether this is enough to propel her to the top of the next rounds of surveys remains to be seen.
But then again, we go back to an earlier issue that you raised. It cannot be just about the Marcos narrative, can it?
Yes. Yes, because again, born out of focus group discussions and research, no, I think, no, amidst this existential crisis that we're still facing, no, the pandemic, no, people are hoping, no, for a different kind of narrative. I think from my own analysis, no, I think people are looking for a change in narrative. No, it's not a narrative of the past, a series of political revenge and vendetta, or going after past sins. No, of course, these are important in the name of accountability and justice. No, and of course, we should not lose track of this. But from the perspective of the public, no, they are looking for a more aspirational, more inspirational, more hope, no, in the coming elections.
And do you think Vice President Leni Robredo, Isko Moreno, Panfilo Lacson, do you think any of them are capable of giving this narrative to the people?
Well, we are still at the starting line, no, and we haven't seen what they will offer. But of course, we already have an inclination of what storyline they will be weaving in front of the Filipino nation. But of course, it depends on the narrative that they will share, the program, the vision that they have for the country.
Yeah, of course. I feel to mention there Senator Manny Pacquiao as well.
Of course.
Really responsible for hoisting himself out of poverty.
Right.
Blood, sweat, and tears as well.
But right.
It still remains to be seen if he can do the same for majority
correct.
Of the people who live right. below the poverty line.
Right.
Dr. Julio Tehanki, I'm sorry, but that's all about
time that
we have for now. Thank you.
Of course.
So
thank you
for joining us this afternoon. I'm sure we're going to talk to you again in the coming days. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Right, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll turn our focus on the climate crisis and why it's important for the Philippines to participate in the upcoming UN climate talks. Keep it here on ANC. You're watching Dateline Philippines. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The son of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos, former Senator Bongbong Marcos, formalizes his bid for the presidency. The Lacson-Soto tandem officially joins the 2022 presidential race. And Vice President Leni Robredo set to make an important announcement on her 2022 plans. And joining us on the program is Isambayan convener Etta Rosales to discuss the impending announcement of Vice President Eleni Robredo, as well as the presidential bid of former Senator Bongbong Marcos. Etta, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, Carmina, good afternoon. Thank you.
All right, so we're counting the hours to the Vice President's announcement tomorrow. What do you think she'll be saying then?
Well, it's not what I think. It's what I hope she will be saying then. And I hope that she says that, well, finally, I have decided, or maybe she has decided a long time ago, except that she has decided to make the announcement tomorrow. I hope she will.
That's what you're hoping for, Etta, but what do you know? Tell us what you know about it.
No, that I don't know. I mean, it's political intuition. It's our sense. When, you know, she has said over and over again, the first time that we asked her, that I wrote a letter to her, and she answered the executive committee of Akbayan, and she said that, you know, I have never, that was when we got scared, that we felt that she was just going to support the alliance between Senator Pacquiao and Mayor Isko. And she said, I have never said that I was endorsing and supporting any particular alliance. Neither have I said that I am no longer interested in the presidential elections. If the country feels that I need to be to run, I certainly will. So, I mean, those are words of optimism for us. Yeah. Then she said, at another time, she said, you know something? Kahit na dehado ako, oras na tumakbo si Marcos. Oras na tumakbo siya, lalaban ako. Kahit na dehado ako sa numbers. And, you know, she kept on talking about, well, my numbers have to grow bigger, my numbers have to grow bigger, and so on.
Yeah.
So those are the essential points that she would, you know, bring out and express, and we just have to grasp it.
Tell me something, though, Etta. There are those who have been critical of how slow her decision-making process has been. And there are those who say, or who are concerned that she may take as long to decide when it comes to national or issues of national importance. What do you say about that?
I think that we should not being critical because of what we think, because of what we would like her to say, is self-serving. It's self-serving because tama naman siya. Tama naman siya, Carmina, pag sinabi niya. Kasi, sino ba? What about Sarah? Sarah is now mayor, but her father wants her to be president. And it took, what's its name? Bongbong Marcos. Ngayon lamang si Bongbong Marcos. Everybody has been, ang mga nauna lang talaga was Senator Ping Lacson, Mayor Isko, and then Senator Pacquiao. Sila tatlo. Pero ito yung mga non-administration candidates, contenders for the throne. Pero yung sa Duterte camp, it's been taking them so long. And wala namang nagsasabing masyado silang mabagal. So I think that tama si ang kampo ni Vice President Leni, na she has been trying to do, you know, trying to unite everybody. So we get impatient and we say, ano ba naman ang unite niya? Andiyan na nga, nagsabi na sila, nag-anunsyo na sila.
Opo.
Pero hindi naman yun eh.
Pero yun na nga po ang tanong ngayon ng marami. Is the dream still alive to have that united opposition? We just saw Senator Panfilo Lacson and Senate President Tito Soto formalize their bids. Is that the end of that dream?
Of course not. Of course
not. Why do you say so?
I say so because, at least from Sambayan's point of view, the people's choice, and we have already made a choice, is that Leni Robredo is the appropriate president presidential candidate who has been consistent, steadfast, and has never, never deviated from her strong positions.
Mm.
With respect to the West Philippine Sea, with respect to subservience to China, with respect to the people's struggle, with respect to EJ case, and so on and so forth. No? And the economic recession that's ongoing right now. She has never deviated from that. And that is what we have to pay attention to.
Mm. You said it yourself that you heard it from the vice president herself that if Bongbong Marcos decides to run, that she will make a go for it as well. But do you think that that's the only narrative that she should have if and when she decides to gun for the presidency? The Marcos narrative, Edda.
No, not just the Marcos narrative. What about Duterte? Sinabi rin niya yan eh. We cannot afford to have another 6 years of the Duterte administration. In other words, it's a tandem between Marcos and Duterte. Because that tandem spells a return to autocracy. It may not be called martial law, because martial law is in the Constitution.
Mm.
But it is a return to autocratic rule, to despotic rule, to tyrannical rule. And that's what counts. And I think that is what she stands for. So in that regard, Carmina, I will give her the space. Although I have to admit, ako nga, nakukuha na ako eh. Nai-impatient ako. Bakit ba tagal ta- Bakit ba tagal-tagal yung ganon, no? Ako, oh, sa totoo lang, I'm a human being naman eh.
So, pero Etta, I don't know if you caught my discussion with Professor T. Hanke just a while ago. He did say that, you know, it cannot be just about the Marcos narrative. It cannot be just about the Duterte narrative. One has to be aspirational and inspirational as well. Do you think that the chosen one, for Isambayan at least, Lenny Robredo, will be able to do that as she guns for the presidency, if and when she so decides?
But it will have, yes, she can do it not alone, but with the help of the people who believe in democracy, who believe in change, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why, even in our discussions with Sambayan, we say that, supposing, you know, because people keep on asking, what if she decides to go local? Ano gagawin ninyo? Magre-reconvene kami. Pag-uusapan namin uli yan. Sabi namin, lagi namin sinasabi yan.
Hmm.
But we will wait for her. That's number one. No? Then number two, kung ano ang position namin, we are for the restoration of real democracy and an end to Dutertismo, as they call it, no? Which is really despotic rule, and a stop to the return of the Marcoses. We're going to do it. And number three, ask Sambayan to, huh? And number three, and then of course, we will have to talk to her about this. And then number three is the Filipino people, Carmina, ultimately is what counts. Is what counts. Hindi lamang yan usapin ng mga politiko na nagsasalita at nag-uusap sa isa't isa. And I always say that, kaya nga sa Sambayan, doon sa mga discussions namin, when we say uniting the democratic forces to bring about the change that we want, we're not just talking about the set of politicians who are contenders for the throne.
Mm-mm.
We're not just talking about the non-administrative contenders.
Mm-mm.
Right now.
Yeah,
we're talking about the Filipino people that have to be empowered and have to work together collectively. It's difficult. It's a difficult situation, but that's how it is. It is never, never easy.
Etta, when Isambayan formally endorsed Lenny Robredo as their standard, as your group's standard bearer, you stopped short of having an endorsement for your vice presidential bet as well. If you choose, for example, Senator Antonio Trillanes or even Senator Bam Aquino or even Senator Franklin Drilon, as some have floated, do you think that that would be tantamount to staying within the echo chamber and not really a step towards uniting Democratic forces?
It's a step towards uniting the Democratic forces because we will have to do it closely with her. We have always argued that she will have to choose her vice president. It'll have to be a tandem. You know, let's stop this idea of the president is different from the vice president. They have to be close to each other. And we have to respect that. That is why when the question was asked, what if, you know, what her choice is outside of Sambayan?
Yeah.
What are you going to do, no?
Yeah.
Then nag-debate kami rin, nag-discussion. Diba? Nag-discussion kami. I hope, at ang sabi ko, ang demokrasya, we have to respect internal democracy even within Sambayan.
No po.
Part of this is yung pinagkaisahan na namin na it is important for our president, our choice, to be able to be comfortable with her presidential choice. Yun yun.
Kaya hindi kayo nag-ano, kaya hindi kayo nag-announce because you're leaving it up to her.
Oh yeah. Importante yan. Mahalaga yan.
Mm-hmm.
Kasi okay. Si Trillanes naman was the, you know, nung lumabas na yan eh, he got the most number of votes, no?
Mm-hmm.
Pero hindi namin uunahan siya. Igagalang namin kung ano ang nakikita niya na komportable siya.
Okay. Does that, well, hindi pa natin alam, pero alam niyo ba kung komportable siya kay Senator Trillanes?
Hindi namin alam.
Okay. Etta, I also want to talk to you about, before we go, very important issue for you as well, because you were one of the first ones to represent a party list, right? And with the, some are calling it the abominations that we're seeing right now, what do you think is happening to the party list system here in the country? I mean, you have one, a former government official, just declaring her bid as a party list representative for barangays, for barangay workers. What do you make of that?
Yeah, sometimes you wonder, it's taking advantage of particular positions they happen to have. If they are in government, you know, like League of Municipalities maybe, or League of Mayors, or barangays this time, no? So that's taking advantage of certain positions, when in fact, the start of the party list system was proportional representation, which meant democratizing the voice, especially of the underprivileged.
Right. The marginalized.
Yun.
But then you have this. I mean, barangays are like the first taste of the citizenry of governance, of government. And yet you have them masquerading as part of the marginalized sector, Etta.
Yeah. But isn't it a fact that barangays very often have been used as transmission belts of these, you know, traditional politicians, trapo as they would call them, in order to get the votes of the people, you know, just without listening to the voice of the people. They would use them. And what would they do in order to be able to get the voice of the people? Then they'd use money, the politics of money. That patronage politics, and then the polite term, I only learned about it recently, the polite term for corruption is rent-seeking, you know, in the economic, I'm not an economist, well, very recently I just learned about that. So that's it. Rent-seeking has been institutionalized as part and parcel of the problems of patronage politics, rent-seeking, and money politics.
Finally, I want to go back to the issue at hand here, and that's Bongbong Marcos formalizing his bid for the presidency. A lot of revisionism that has been happening. It's been creeping. So let me ask you, how will truth prevail over the lies that they've woven the past decades?
much has to do, Carmina, with our respect for our democratic institutions. Because if we study, and this is what we want to give to the people or discuss with the people in people's languages, very simple languages, there have been three Supreme Court decisions, 2003, 2012, and 2017, that have actually ruled that the Marcos money is ill-gotten wealth. And the money that is now with Bongbong Marcos is still part and parcel of the ill-gotten wealth because PCGG has not been able to capture and get all the money from the dummy foundations. And there have been multiple dummy foundations.
Mm.
It's important for the people to know that because they created dummy foundations for fake reasons, you know, foundations are intended to be for charitable purposes, right? For the benefit of the common good. But they created this for the children, for Aimee, for Irene, and for Bongbong. And the children were old enough to recognize and realize this. And Bongbong was definitely old enough. In fact, he fought so much for the Arelma money in the 2012 ruling by the Supreme Court.
Mm.
So having said that, PCGG says we've only been able to take care of about five of the multiple foundations. The other foundations have been, wala, nakuha na nila, and it's all over the world. We've heard so much about the British Islands, the Virgin Islands, where Aimee's investments are there. And then in so many other banks, no? We've heard so much about they not paying a single centavo for real estate taxes.
Mm. So these are the things that people should remember
and should know. The people should understand that this is public funds.
Mm-hmm.
These are funds of the people that should return to them, to be returned to them.
All right. I'm sorry, but we've run out of time. We still have one more discussion waiting in the wings, but we'd like to thank you for joining us today. It's very nice seeing you again. Take care.
Thank you so much, Carmina. It was a pleasure.
Take care and keep safe. Eta Rosales there, co-convener of Opposition Coalition Isang Bayan. All right. From there, we're going to take another break. Up ahead, a discussion on the obligations of governments on addressing climate change with the UK's COP26 regional ambassador. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news. The Philippines logged 9,055 new COVID infections Tuesday, the lowest figure recorded in the country in nearly 2 months. The positivity rate also declined to a two-month low of 19.3%. But the health department notes the relatively low number of fresh cases was due to lower testing output. The agency also again failed to report new deaths due to issues with its data collating system. The Philippine Food and Drug Administration grants four hospitals compassionate special use for the oral COVID-19 drug developed by U.S. drug maker Merck. FDA Director General Eric Domingo notes molnupiravir can be given compassionate use permit even if it does not have emergency use authorization in the Philippines or the U.S. yet. The Philippines is running a trial on the pill.
No, multi-country yung ano no yung clinical trial ng molnupiravir kasama na rin dito sa Pilipinas. At yung nakita nila sa interim analysis nila is that it can prevent possibly no 50% of people going into severe COVID and dying from COVID. Kailangan i-complete po yung clinical trial para in the end, makakuha po sila ng full registration or certificate of product registration at maaari na po siyang i-market sa mga butika at sa mga retail outlets.
Governments are facing an enormous amount of pressure to get their acts together to address climate change and its disastrous effects. Later this month, nations will tackle that issue at the United Nations Climate Change Conference under the leadership of the United Kingdom. Joining us today is Ken O'Flaherty. He is the UK COP26 Regional Ambassador. Ambassador, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here in the Philippines, in such a beautiful country and a country which is already suffering the impacts of climate change.
Which we're going to talk about later on. But first, many have called COP26 as the world's last or best last chance to get runaway climate change under control. The question is, with the UK at the helm, how will it lead leaders to really go beyond the rhetoric?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's essential that we pass to action. You've noted the need for greater momentum in the process. We haven't done enough to tackle emissions worldwide. The world isn't on track to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, which was the goal agreed in Paris 5 years ago. And the latest IPCC report released just a few weeks ago showed that we need to be dramatically increasing our action to reduce emissions if we're to meet that target. So we are working strongly with all our partners worldwide. We're trying to engage key partners. That's why I'm here in the Philippines, to give the message that if we don't act now, then by the end of this century, we will have warmed the world by at least 3 degrees Celsius. And we'll be seeing ever more major extreme weather events, whether that's typhoons, flooding, forest fires, and so forth. And the consequences for people worldwide will be catastrophic in that scenario.
If it is the world's best last chance to get a runaway climate change under control, what goals has the UK set for this year's conference?
So we have four key goals. I mean, the first is obviously to ensure that partners worldwide do reduce emissions. So we are pressing all partners to set ambitious 2050 net zero targets, so bringing emissions to net zero by 2050 or earlier. We are trying to lead by example. We and our other G7 partners have set similar targets. We hope the Philippines will be able to join us. But waiting until 2050, of course, isn't an option. We need to be taking action now as well to bring down emissions. So we're also pressing for clear plans set out through NDCs to limit emissions by 2030 as well. We were pleased that the Philippines already has their NDC, which is setting out plans for a greater expansion of renewable energy. We hope they can go even faster and with international support. And so that is a particularly key priority. But it's not enough to just be limiting emissions. We have to be helping countries which are dealing with the impacts of climate change today. A third of Bangladesh, for example, was underwater just last year. So we have to be ensuring that we're helping countries like the Philippines build more resilient infrastructure, ensure that they're able to adapt to the climate impacts. And we very much welcome the fact that Philippines is already a relative leader in this area, and we want to work with them and our ASEAN partners. And the Philippines has, of course, endorsed the Adaptation Alliance coalition. And we want to also work and explore this week in my visit whether the Philippines might be able to join the Leaders Pledge for Nature and the Global Ocean Alliance, which is aiming to protect 30% of our world's oceans by 2030. But again, in order to adapt, in order to build that resilience, in order to cut emissions, that's going to have a cost. And so we're very clear that the world's donors need to take action on our third priority, which is finance, ensuring that the donors meet the goal set in Paris of mobilizing $100 billion every year in international climate finance. So that's been a big part of our role. I myself have been lobbying key donors in this region, and we hope very much that by Glasgow we can see significant progress there as well. And then finally, collaboration. It's not just about conversations between governments. This has to be an all-of-society approach. Business, for example, has a key role in driving net zero targets. And so I will be meeting with businesses here in the Philippines, and we are doing so worldwide, encouraging them to set net zero targets, to change their car fleets to electric vehicles, for example, to look at their supply chains and ensure that they're sustainable supply chains. And I think by working together between governments, businesses, civil society, we can take action to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees.
Yeah, that's looking forward. And of course, that pretty much lays out the tremendous work that all the world actually has in store for it, or is in front of the rest of the planet when it comes to the work that's needed to be done. But Ambassador, spell it out for us. What are the challenges faced by richer nations? Why haven't they gone beyond the rhetoric? And why has the fight, as important as it is, why is it that it's still not a gut issue for majority of the world?
Well, I think we are seeing a major change worldwide. I think that societies are recognizing the existential threat that's posed by climate change. And unfortunately, until recently, it has been mostly the climate vulnerable countries, developing countries, which have seen the worst effects of extreme weather events. But that is changing. And we have seen just this year in the US, in Europe, elsewhere, major flooding, forest fires and so forth. So I think I am hearing people around the world clamoring for stronger action by their political leaders. And I think that it puts us in a stronger position going into Glasgow. But I also think that we're seeing greater action by governments. We're not seeing enough at all, and that's why we are pushing strongly for more. But whenever I took on this job just over a year ago, I think only about 30% of the world economy was covered by a net zero target. Today, it's over 70%. And so I think we're seeing the G7 now all have net zero targets of 2050. They all have short-term plans for 2030, which are aligned with that goal. We need to see greater action by our G20 partners on some major economies in this region. We are significant contributors of emissions. And we also need to see action on other international levels as well. But I think we are making progress, but we need to see a lot more in the coming weeks ahead of Glasgow.
All right. Finally, Ambassador O'Flaherty, you know, you mentioned the Paris Accord. It's been years since then. What will make COP26 different from the other conferences that came before it?
Well, I think we are pleased at the renewed political momentum that we're seeing worldwide. So we have over 120 leaders who have already confirmed they will be coming to Glasgow. We are holding a specific political event for leaders for the first 2 days in Glasgow. And I think that political commitment should be by the presence of leaders should be translated into action. And certainly we will be pushing leaders to make greater commitments, both on emissions and on finance and on support for the adaptation and dealing with the impacts of the crisis. I think that we have already seen just in the last few weeks new net zero announcements in this region. We've seen Malaysia and Sri Lanka announce that they have net zero targets, but also that they're eliminating coal. It was really good to see the Philippines leading the way last year with your coal moratorium. We hope that can be made permanent. And I think in the longer term, of course, I'm optimistic because the economics on the emission side are very clear. Renewable energy is now by far the cheapest option for countries worldwide compared to fossil fuels. And I think the COVID context in some ways can provide opportunities because we know that investment in renewable energy can create up to 3 times more jobs than investment in coal or in fossil fuels. So I think we are encouraging governments worldwide to take this opportunity to invest in clean, green energy, which will actually drive growth in their economies as well. So we hope we have the political momentum behind us, but we need the support of countries like the Philippines to be raising the pressure worldwide for countries to cut emissions. And hopefully the Philippines can also lead by example as well.
Well, Ken O'Flaherty, the UK government's COP26 regional ambassador, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining us today. You take care and keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina. Take care.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.